This is Athens Unpacked. I'm Sofka Zinoviev, and in a series of podcasts, I'm continuing my long quest to understand this fascinating city. Athens Unpacked is made for This Is Athens, the official visitor's guide to the city. I love Greek food. There's a generosity of spirit around the business of eating and cooking. In this episode, we'll go food shopping the Athenian way. We'll search for wild greens, and we'll look at how Greeks make fasting fun. Finally, we'll take a nosedive into the city's smells. Athenians adore their neighbourhood markets. There are almost 200 in Athens and Piraeus. I leave my local organic market laden, not only with fruit and veg, but anything from olives, herbs and local honeys to handmade yogurt, bread and cheese. To discuss all this, I'm going shopping with a dedicated foodie. We've come to meet Carolina Zoriti here in her local market. It's in Ambelokipi, which is vineyards, really. So I imagine in the old days, these slopes were covered in beautiful vineyards. And Carolina, you're a professional chef and food writer, but like nearly all Athenians, you like to do your weekly shop here in a market. Why do you think we all prefer this sort of shopping?
I mean, markets here in Greece, they're very different to what they are in most countries abroad. So here they rotate throughout the week and they move to different neighborhoods. So you've got a farmer's market right outside your door once a week at least. And it's great because you have a personal relationship with the producers and you find what's in season. You find very fresh produce, and also it's much cheaper than shopping at a supermarket or at the grocery store, which is exactly the opposite of what it usually is abroad.
I can see some really tempting seasonal produce. What would you point out?
Well, the wild asparagus, I mean, they go up on the mountains to pick them. They have a very short season, and they're super tasty. I mean, they're the best asparagus.
What would you cook with those asparagus?
I would blanch them and eat them in a salad, just with olive oil and lemon, or add them in an omelette. The simplest, I think, you cook these kind of ingredients, the better you can taste them. And also the wild artichokes, which are thorny. And they grow a lot in the Peloponnese.
We've stopped at your favourite fish stall. I've seen that there are several all the way along the market. What sort of things can we see here today?
So again, the same way we see the seasonal vegetable and the fruit, it's the same with the fish and the seafood. So this is a very good season for fish and seafood. So we also see the sardines and the anchovies and the mackerel. So where από πού τα φέρετε αυτά?
Από Χαλκίδα είναι.
So that's Χαλκίδα is on the island of Evia, which is very close to Athens, and it's an area that is very well known for the fish.
Είναι κατευθείαν από τους ψαράδες.
Ναι, ναι, απευθείας, εκτός αγορά είναι.
So they buy it straight from the fishermen there.
We've just stopped at a stall selling only tomatoes with a few fresh big lemons at the back. But Carolina, you immediately spotted these tomatoes. What was it? You picked one up, you smelt it. What?
Yeah,
how do you tell a good tomato?
First of all, I saw where they came from, because that's another thing you see at the farmer's market. You see where they come from. Mm-hmm. So it's from the island of Poros. It's a very small island. And the tomatoes, they look small, they look natural, and they smell great. So a thing I have to say to people about tomatoes is to never put them in the fridge.
I quite agree. They lose all their taste.
And texture is ruined as well. So they should always be kept outside the fridge, stem looking up, because that's where they breathe from, and that's how they mature.
We've come down a little side street from the market to have a bit of a chat about food. One of the things about Greek food that I really like, because I don't eat meat, is that traditional Greek foods are what they call lathera, so oily, or based on around olive oil, pulses, vegetables. I mean, in the past, Greeks didn't eat very much meat at all, did they?
I think traditional Greek cuisine can also be seen through the monastery cuisine of Greece, which is extremely interesting. And you can see that it's basically plant-based, with a little bit of seafood and extremely little meat. And that's why also a lot of the traditional recipes that use meat basically use a small amount of meat because people were poor, just to give flavor to the dish rather than having like a big amount of meat.
One of the things that I've noticed since I first came to Greece in the 1980s is that then there was quite a big embracing of new fads like fast food and hamburgers and chips, whereas these days there's been a return to understanding the value of the Mediterranean diet, the Cretan diet, and a kind of going back to grassroots. Do you think that's true?
I think this tendency started about 15 years ago. And people started reading and started to explore the history of Greek cuisine and bring it back to fashion. And I think this has also got to do with the appreciation of people from different countries, you know, appreciating very simple and humble dishes of Greece, like a chickpea soup or a fava, you know, like the yellow split peas.
And also an appreciation of food from different areas of Greece. So people are aware of, this is a dish from Epirus, yeah. Or this is from Crete.
Yeah. And I think that's the magic of Greek cuisine as well, that it's such a small country, but it really has so many regional cuisines with different influences. Like you go to the south, there's more like olive oil, you go to the, and lemon juice. You go to the north, there are more spices, a little bit more butter used. You go to the west, there are more Italian influences. You know, you go to the east, there's more like Ottoman influences. So it's very interesting.
While Athenians are embracing Greek cuisine in all its different forms, they're also embracing cuisines from all around the world. So you now find, you know, we have a little Pakistan where there are lots of little restaurants setting up, or Chinese and Japanese that from my youth, I mean, you hardly ever saw restaurants serving foreign food. I mean, I love this.
It's also because of all the immigrants that have been coming to Greece. I mean, I remember growing up here, I never saw many other cultures apart from Greeks or maybe some people from Balkan countries. And I remember when I first moved to London, it was like extremely interesting to me to see so many different cultures living together, coexisting, having their traditions, you know, restaurants that you can go in and feel like you're in India. So this is happening now in Greece, and I think it's great.
There's been a huge flowering of Greek wines also in recent times, hasn't there?
Yes, it was about time. You know, Greeks were the first to bottle wine, well, in amphoras, and they were probably the last to rebottle it in the 1950s. So there was a big gap in between. But the Greek wine is thriving, I think. Even the new age retsina, which is for me a very interesting subject because everybody thinks of a yellow retsina, but it has become something much more sophisticated.
Can you name a good new age retsina?
To dakri tou pevkou.
The tear of the pine tree. How lovely. Carolina's currently writing a book about Greek food. The working title is Salt of the Earth, The Secrets of a Hellenic Kitchen. It's personal and historical, and I can't wait to read it. In the meantime, you can follow her culinary adventures on Instagram at @Carolina_Doriti. I noticed numerous stalls in Carolina's market that were selling horta, or greens, but people also like to pick their own. I'm going to meet Diana Farr-Lewis to identify what's growing in Greater Athens. Diana is a wonderful travel and cookery writer. as she puts it, she moved from the big apple to the big olive, and that was almost 50 years ago. Diana, we've come to your local park in Marusi in search of horta, wild greens. Can you tell me what that entails?
Well, you've come to the right place because as we stand here, I can see several different kinds of things just in huge amounts, like arugula, rocket, wild mustard, mallow, which you could wrap like you would dolmades with instead of vine leaves. You could get big leaves. They have a nice purple flower as well. I see some dandelion. I see some little tiny things that the Greeks called anginarike, but have nothing to do with artichokes. Nearby, there are fields of alliums of wild garlic. I can't tell you how many there are here. It's a treasure trove.
As soon as the first autumnal rains come, and then through the winter and almost into summer, you see on any bit of waste ground, in parks, on hills, you'll get people out with a plastic bag and a knife bent over digging things out of the ground. And, you know, I used to sort of think, what are they doing? But in fact, they're digging out this treasure trove here, which has a long history. I mean, it's quite a favourite dish in Greece, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It's amazing that it's a total staple, but it is the basis of the Mediterranean diet.
When you buy greens, like in the greengrocer or the market, there are also different qualities. So as you were referring, you get the bitter ones or the mild ones, or you get the more expensive types, like from Crete, you get some kind of superstars, don't you?
Yes, there's Stamnagathi, which used to be grown wild. You would only find it in Crete. You now find it in our farmers markets. And there's another one called Askrolimboth, which is in Crete. I have hardly ever seen it here because you eat the root as well as the little branches, which costs more than filet mignon.
But there's another side to the whole story of horta, which is still resonant in some ways, which is that during times of hunger, and there have been some very serious ones within living memory, horta was sometimes the only thing that people could find to eat.
Yes, because my husband, who was born in 1925 and grew up in central Athens, remembers not having enough to eat ever, stepping over bodies going on his way to school, because people were dying by the hundreds in Athens every day.
This was, of course, during the Nazi occupation.
During the Nazi occupation, 1942, 43, when it was also bitterly cold. And he doesn't remember eating much except horta, one little slice of bread per day, and tahini soup made out of sesame seed paste, which he cannot abide now.
One of the things that I remember from my very early days when I first came to Greece is that it felt to me as if there was a kind of memory of those days of hunger, even among people who had plenty to eat. And you'd see mothers encouraging their children in ways that I hadn't seen elsewhere. Have you come across that?
That was what struck me too, Sofka, when I first came here. I couldn't believe my eyes of mothers chasing their children around the playground with spoons, feeding them through the wire fence.
But I think what brings us full circle with horta is that although it was something that was eaten when people were starving, it's now really recognised as an incredibly nutritional element of a good, healthy diet.
It's the basis of the Cretan diet, the Mediterranean diet, which, as we have to keep reminding people, is not a diet. It's a way of life. But greens, wild and cultivated greens, are definitely the foundation of it. And they have remarkable properties. And these properties are released when they're combined with olive oil. Olive oil is the magic ingredient that brings out the vitamins, makes them taste even better, and then you have the lovely juices afterwards to sop up with some bread, without which no meal in Greece is complete.
Greeks cook seasonally according to what's available, but also according to the Orthodox calendar. There are numerous feast days and even more fasting days, some before Christmas, others before the Assumption of the Virgin in mid-August. The most significant of all is Lent, the 40 days leading up to Easter. Many Athenians do some sort of fasting for Lent, some because it's healthy, some like the tradition, and some because they're devout Christians. You commonly find fasting foods in tavernas and even fast food joints. Bakeries tend to stock things like spinach pie made without cheese. It's very handy if you're vegan. Just ask for nistissima foods and look slightly holy. Αστέρια δε φέγγω βολού, άσπρη μου περιστέρα, και τα πουλιά εγκελαϊδού την κάθαρη Δευτέρα. That was the Song of Clean Monday, Καθαρή Δευτέρα, by Mimis Plessas. It refers to the first day of Lent that comes after 3 weeks of carnival. But instead of ashes and austerity, Greeks turn the first day into a celebration. Clean Monday, Καθαρά Δευτέρα, a bank holiday. It's usually just as spring is burgeoning, and the tradition is to have a picnic and fly a kite. Athenians take to the hills. Philopappou, near the Acropolis, is a traditional destination. But others go to the seaside, and the roads out of the centre are lined with entrepreneurial types selling kites, what in Greek are called paper eagles, chartaiti. This year, as usual, I went shopping for the picnic. The requisite shops stay open so you can stock up on the day. First stop was a bakery for the delicious flatbread called lagana, only made on Clean Monday. It's a bit like a focaccia covered in sesame seeds. Large chunks are usually missing by the time the picnic begins. This year, I bought a new variant of lagana with sun-dried tomato. It was excellent. Then I went to the delicatessen counter of my local supermarket and asked about the customary picnic foods. There was an impressive variety: stuffed vine leaves, black-eyed beans, various salads, olives, and pickles. But then there are lots that don't exactly sound like fasting foods. Calamari, octopus, prawns, taramo salata. That's because there's an interesting get-out clause. Any animal that doesn't have blood in it is fair game. So while dairy products, eggs and meat are forbidden, seafood like shellfish or squid is de rigueur. It's what Diana Farr-Lewis calls vegan with lobster. The traditional sweet for Lent is one of my favourites, chalvas, made from crushed sweetened sesame seeds. Lent is traditionally a time of asceticism, the 40-day preparation for Orthodox Easter, which is by far the most important holiday of the year in Greece. The church hedges its bets and calls Clean Monday a day of celebratory mourning. People wish each other good Lent, Kalli Sarkosti, but Clean Monday is far from mournful. I'd say it's one of the most delightful days, both for culinary treats and for atmosphere. People sprawl among the spring flowers, eating their picnics. Wine flows. There's often music playing. And when your gaze turns to the blue sky, it'll be filled with colourful kites. Trust the Greeks to turn a fast into a feast. Mm. We've looked at lots of tastes, but for me, the odours of Athens are equally important. I've long aspired to creating a bespoke perfume, and this got me thinking, what would I choose if I could bottle Athens? Most great perfumes are not just a pretty smell. They contain ideas and stories. Elements complement and oppose each other. Different scent molecules emerge over time. They intrigue, delight, and seduce. No exceptional perfume is the scent of only one flower. Of course, my perfume will have floral tones. For my top notes, I'll start with crushed lemon leaves and lemon blossom. This recreates my favourite balcony gardening activity. Plus some bitter orange blossom because it's everywhere. Mustn't forget jasmine on a summer's night. Then a few herbs. Basil when you rub your hand over a plant outside a taverna. Some thyme and oregano as you crush them underfoot on a hill. For base notes, I'll add frankincense, like you'd get walking past a church. And some fresh ground coffee from the cafe next door. There'll be a hint of salty skin on a stony beach. I swim all year round near Athens, and it's one of the best bits of the day. Then pine resin, softened by the sun, which of course is the magic ingredient in retsina. A fruity bouquet will include summer peaches, figs and grapes. The fresh spritz will be petrichor, that magical smell of rain hitting dry ground or rock. And naturally in Athens, it's sun-warmed marble, carved at some point in the last few millennia. Professional perfumiers usually include something decadent or even dirty to add sophistication. For example, the highly prized ambergris is basically whale poo. For my eau d'Athènes, there'll be a whiff of tobacco. Athenians are nothing if not dedicated smokers. And finally, a plume of traffic fumes. My friend Amalia was brought up largely outside Greece, but as a teenager, she longed for Athens. Whenever she visited, she'd rush to Akademias, one of the busiest streets, and she'd happily inhale lungfuls of exhaust pollution, the beloved scent of home. Chromata, This song is Chromata ke Aromata, Colours and Perfumes, sung with spine-tingling vibrato by the magnificent Cretan Nikos Xylouris. Smells provoke emotions and evoke memories, and Athens has an opulent osmocosm, or world of smells. If you want an olfactory adventure, I'd recommend the central market of Varvakios and the surrounding streets. The meat market is not for the squeamish. Expect blood, guts, and brains. But stroll down Evripidou or Euripides Street and you'll find aromas that take you on ambitious journeys via your nostrils. There are spice shops redolent of nutmeg and cloves, reminding us of Greece's old trading routes to the east. There are places selling only herbs. You find stores with dozens of different olives or just pies. And I love the hardware stores with their old-fashioned aluminium jugs and trays and their own set of aromas. For a snack, Your nose may lead you to some freshly fried lukumaves, the dough balls drenched in honey and sprinkled with cinnamon. It's almost overwhelming, but many of these smells have a long history in the area. Right down the road is the restored Stoa of Attalos in the Roman Agora or marketplace. This kind of shopping has been going on around here for thousands of years. In the next episode, we're taking to the streets. Athenians have always lived much of their life outdoors, from the ancient philosophers to today's summer concerts. We'll look at the protest march as an intrinsic part of the city, and we'll hear the secret confessions of a graffiti tagger. I am Sofka Zinoviev, and you just listened to Athens Unpacked for This Is Athens, the official visitor's guide to the city of Athens, online at thisisathens.org. You can find all episodes of Athens Unpacked on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any of your favourite podcast apps. Athens Unpacked is a production of pod.gr. Thanks to Katerina Bakoyani for her endless support. Producer, Michalis Kamakas. Sound engineer, Chrisa Kurenda. Director of Productions, Elena Dimitraiki. Assistant producer, Lara Papadimitriou. Original theme music by Anna Papadimitriou. This podcast is funded by Greece and the European Union. Pod.gr. Sounds good.